This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
That was the Jubilate Deo of Benjamin Britten from a recent 2-CD set on the Novum label featuring the choir of New College, Oxford, conducted by Edward Higginbottom. This is James Jordan from Westminster Choir College. This edition of Sounds Choral on the Classical Network is coming to you from the University of Oxford at the internationally recognized Choral Institute of Oxford. The Choral Institute at Oxford is a unique partnership between Westminster Choir College and St. Stephen's House, a permanent private house at the University of Oxford, where the acclaimed Westminster Williamson Voices is the choir in residence. This program is co-directed by myself and the Grammy-nominated producer and world-acclaimed composer James Whitborn. Each year, 30 conductors come to this incredible place to not only study with the world-renowned Oxford faculty, but also is a place where the ensemble in residence, the Westminster Williamson Voices, becomes the real teacher with their singing and feedback to each conductor. This common sharing of the shared miracle that is choral singing follows in the inspired wisdom of Westminster Choir College's founder, John Finley Williamson. One of the only programs of its kind in the world, information for study at the Choral Institute of Oxford each year, held the first 2 weeks of July, can be found at rider.edu/Oxford. Today's program features an interview with Edward Higginbottom. Edward Higginbottom was appointed Director of Music at New College, Oxford, in 1976 at the unusually young age of 29. His work at Oxford is divided between New College Choir and the Faculty of Music, where he teaches performance practice along with other specialities. He also publishes within areas of his expertise, recently contributing chapters to the Cambridge Companion to the Organ, and entries on French music to the New Grove Dictionary of Music. For 38 years, he brought to the work of New College Choir an extensive knowledge of the choral repertory and performance styles. Under his direction, the choir has achieved international recognition and has brought choral music of a high quality to an increasingly wide range of public opinion and listening through more than 70 recordings and many concerts in this country and abroad. The choir has become renowned for its interpretations of Renaissance and Baroque music, and latterly for its choral compilation recordings encompassing music from folk song to Taverner to Arvo Pärt. Indeed, one of Edward Higginbotham's objectives has been for the choir to sing a particularly wide range of music in the conviction that music making is revitalized by the challenges of an eclectic repertory. His musical background is almost too extensive to talk about as a keyboardist. His early part of his career were marked by distinction as a keyboard player. He gained his fellowship of the Royal College of Organists before leaving school, winning the Hardin and Reed Prizes for the most outstanding candidate of the year. A long association with Corpus Christi College, Cambridge, followed, beginning with an organ scholarship, continuing with graduate work and doctoral thesis on French Baroque music, and ending with a research fellowship from the years 1973 to 1976. This, without doubt, is a musician of legendary accomplishment and legendary contributions. So we're thrilled to have him with us today. Well, it gives me great pleasure to welcome someone who became a friend 5 years ago. And Edward, it's an incredible pleasure to be able to sit and talk with you here at St. Stephen's at the Choral Institute. First question I had to ask you is, so you finished one career and quite a legendary career at New College, and you've embarked on the next part of your journey. As you look back at all your years and all the things you did there, is there anything that kind of jumps out at you? This is such an incredible career. I've known your name since I've known about choral music. So, you know, when I met you 5 years ago, it was an incredible experience for me, yeah, personally.
Well, it's wonderful to be in the environment that you set up here at St. Stephen's and to be among your great musicians, your great singers. And again, I've known the work of Westminster Choir College for many years. And in fact, my predecessor had some, David Lumsden, had, I think, some links with you, certainly with Yale.
But, yes.
And I know the reputation of the East Coast choral establishments in the States, very high standing. As for my experience at New College over those years, you know, we did a lot of touring, we did a lot of concerts in prestigious places. So, you know, I might say, conducting Massai in the Concert Gebouw in Amsterdam was a really high point, and indeed it was. But the things that really got deep down inside me were actually a particular evensong that went in sort of viral, in the sense that it was very, very special and unrepeatable, and there may be, you know, sort of 50 people there, but something really wonderful happens. There's a sort of transcendence in the voice and in the music making. And as you come out of that service, you're thinking, look, there were only 50 people there, but there's no place other that I'd want to be than here doing this. So that's the measure. It doesn't happen every service, but,
sure,
but when it does,
sure,
it's the most special treasure that you do treasure for your life.
Let's sample another track from this 2-CD set of the sacred music of Benjamin Britten, with Edward Higginbotham conducting the College of New College, Oxford, singing the final movement of Britten's Rejoice in the Lamb, Opus 30, For I Am Under the Same Accusation, with the text by Christopher Smart.
Thank you.
Well, our subject of this program, I wondered, there's so many discs I could have chosen, but I particularly personally admire this Britain disc on Novum, which is kind of an incredible collection of Britain. And being that, it's also a collection of different Britons, which is almost every piece. What can you tell the listeners about Benjamin Britten from your perspective?
It's sort of Peter Pan figure, really. Always reinventing, always new, always questioning, but evergreen. That's that Britten never sort of stays in the same place, I don't think. For me, the church music has a particular categorization because you are looking at somebody who composed church music out of affiliation to the place that the church had in society, rather than a personal faith.
Really?
Britten didn't possess a strong personal Christian faith. He possessed a strong attachment to the church in terms of its cultural identity, but no attachment at all to doctrine and theology. So what he wanted to do was to enrich the music that gets sung in churches, but on his own terms. And sometimes those terms are quite interesting to unpack. You don't always, in fact, I think generally, he's doing something which sort of is intended to challenge the establishment in its way. I think of the festival Te Deum, there's that middle bit, the King of Glory, which to my ear sounds like a cowboy range sort of bit of music, you know. Mm-hmm. It's people on unsettled horses who are,
yes,
have to work hard to stay on their horse. The bass is going flying up and down these fourths. It's curious. It's not a king in great majesty. It's a king on a sort of in a stampede. It's interesting. It's sort of not what you expect, not what you get from Britten. It is glorious, but it's another take. There's that curious setting of the Venite. He was going to write a setting of Morning Canticles, and he wrote, got the Te Deum in C, which is a great early piece. The later piece he wrote for the Duke of Edinburgh, the Jubilate, which is people find sometimes a bit light and frivolous, certainly at the time it was composed. And then the Venite, which was sort of lay unnoticed for many years. In fact, I'll tell you a story about that in a minute. I have a strong sense that Venite is a parody of Anglican chant. I think that's what it is. It's a take-off. It's Britten saying, oh, Anglican chant's a bit weird, and sometimes the people who do it write very contorted bits of harmonic movement. I'll show you what it means, he says, and he writes this piece that is a bit of a take-off. And I think that's rather nice because it's both, you're both inside the activity of singing this text, and yet you're standing outside it with a little critical gaze on what you're doing.
Well, we'll let the listeners listen to that piece, which is Venite Exultemus. And then can you talk about, let's play for listeners the Te Deum in C, followed by the wedding anthem.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Te Deum in C and the C-ness of the Te Deum in C.
Well, it stays in C for so long that people think it's scarcely possible, but it's not about, it's actually about the way he rhythmically articulates that chord,
yeah,
and about the scoring of it. That's so special. And I think one of the things he says in his church music is, guys, look, we don't need to write everything in half notes and quarter notes. We can actually do lots of syncopation. We can do lots of things with texture. And that's something that the church music tradition has been neglecting for a time. And Britten is very good with words. You know, no mistaking his affinity with Purcell there. And he's a great pictorial sense of moving from one sort of topic in that text to another, and the noble army of martyrs and all that sort of thing done in a quite a sort of suffused haze of incantation, really, as you sort of name off these members of the heavenly host. There's a sort of pictorial idea,
yes,
in his head. It's very strong. I think that is his great gift to English church music of that time, the strong pictorial sense and this this way of challenging the singers to look at it differently, and the tradition is there. The choirs that he knew, the music is of the difficulty they can manage, but the perspective, the camera angles,
yeah,
all rather changed and sort of unusual and challenging.
Well, let's listen to the Te Deum.
Yeah.
This parody piece, Venite Exultemus, I think was sung once in St. George's and then probably never sung again there, and probably not much elsewhere, but it was eventually published. I didn't know it at all, to the point that we'd actually put all this music in the can.
I don't know the piece.
Yeah, well, we were ready to go. We were within a week of publishing this disc, and I suddenly came across this other work, and we were making a bid for doing the complete choral, sacred choral music of Britain, so I couldn't. But so within 24 hours, I got the scores, and within 24 hours, we recorded this, and then put it in the sequence. So it is a piece of music that suddenly jumped out at me from the obscurity of the canon. And there are these bits of Britain that have lain dormant, I think for very good reasons. It's not one of Britain's, you know, it's a sort of slightly twisted bit of Britain. It's Britain with attitude.
Really?
I think so. And so, but if we've got to, you know, present the full range of his sacred choral music, that needs to be represented.
Well, let our listeners listen to it and draw their own opinions. Next, wedding anthem.
Well, the wedding anthem, Amo Ego Sum, I think touches on the most, how can I put it? I was going to say the most sincerest vein. If there are times when Britain distances himself a bit, and he does that by wearing his technique on his sleeve.
Yeah.
This is a piece where I think he embraces, and how appropriate that is for wedding anthem, he embraces the text and that event and produces something really from the heart, really heartfelt, meant right down to the last degree. Scored for treble or soprano, as it was, or treble since it's here, soprano and tenor solos, and this chorus and organ. And it's got all those fingerprints of Britain, nice tonal orientation with added succulence, as it were, very concise sort of language, and picking up very beautifully, in a sort of like a small cantata, each part of the text in a special way. So, like Rejoice in the Lamb, it moves quickly from one subject area to another. It's sort of kaleidoscopic in that regard. But you do get these returns. It's sort of slightly rondo in that regard. Like Rejoice in the Lamb has that final section which resembles an earlier section. So there is a little bit of that broader structural identity about this piece, but more than anything, it's about Britain responding to the text. And once that bit of text is accomplished, then he moves on and he responds viscerally and very strongly to the next bit. It's beautifully written for the organ, it's beautifully written for the voices, the idioms are fully understood, and the creative juices are running very strongly in this piece, and it's 100% sincere. Therein lies a too long story for this session, I think, about what sincerity is in music. Stravinsky famously said, sincerity is the sine qua non guaranteeing nothing. And I think that's another way of looking at it. But I'm using that word here to mean that I think in some of Britain's sacred choral music, he does, to a certain extent, and through his technique, distance himself from the objective, which is worship. There's a sort of slight pulling back from it.
Thank you.
one reads various quotes and then one kind of tries to sew together a philosophical picture of the man. Do you think, in all your experience with Britain, because I sometimes feel this, I think of this in Rejoice in the Lamb, I believe it in the festival today, and I think we just had a run at Westminster, the War Requiem, that there is, I think it was Lenny Bernstein that paraphrased a quote from Britain that said, you know, the text setting is one thing, but the psychological state of Britain or a psychological opinion is contained in the accompaniment.
The commentary coming from
a particular
mind. Yes. Of course, that requiem tells you about the humanity of Britain's spirit. It tells you about the sort of personal crucifixion of his soul, about the sacrifice that people make, the needless sacrifice, the waste of human resource and of human achievement in that war, and in the First World War and the Second War. They're both wars, but the text from the First World War. And so it's a humanist strongly voicing his outrage and his deep grief at this event. And part of the psychology is that Britain was never an establishment figure. By comes his ambivalence about the church, you know, he's not establishment. He's a homosexual. He lives with that at a time when homosexuality was regarded as a very difficult and, generally speaking, rejected sexuality. So he has to deal with that, and he deals with it by running alongside society, but not being fully part of it and its establishment ideals. But when he comes to texts like the War Requiem, he's dealing with those texts, those war poets, Wilfred Owen and others, where he sees an anti-establishment voice. He sees voices saying, "You who rule over us, look at this horrible carnage that you brought upon us." So it fits his personality. It is Weltanschauung, his way of looking at the world is close to him there. And I think that's why you get such a strong reaction from him to these texts. It's visceral, profound, and it speaks of his identity.
One of the voices that I think you can never stop digging, and just not trying to reinterpret, but to see all of the signals and signs and the textures. And I would have loved to have met him, but you just told me before the interview you witnessed the War Requiem premiere. Is that?
That's right. I was there as a teenager, sitting at the organ, turning the pages of the organist. I remember. You all know the Sanctus and the way that bursts upon one. Just so extraordinary. And the resonance that has with the Bach B minor mass Sanctus. There's, you know, the Britain sort of saying, here is the tradition and then here is what I do with it. And to be there next to the brass, as I was.
What was he in that premiere, what was he like as a conductor? Was he feisty? Was he businessman?
He was having to control a beast that was pretty much leaving the building, because the cathedral has difficult acoustic, really difficult acoustic. The performance space was very long and recessed, so the main choir was a long way back. He was directing the chamber orchestra, and Disco and Pierce, the service there. And Meredith Davis was doing the main job, the main orchestra and the main choir. And you couldn't hear. It was very difficult. I mean, the sound gets dispersed and confused. So it was damage limitation, really. And Heather Harper was doing the, because
the soprano.
The soprano was not allowed to get out.
The Russian,
that's right. So these were not the best circumstances in which to, you know, perform his work. And he very quickly went to the studio with, I think, the London Symphony Chorus then, to sort of get a version out there that said what he wanted to say. Because he knew that premiere was not the version that you could probably make a judgment on. I mean, composers, when they write a difficult work like that, have it first performed, can be in a very difficult place. They hear the piece not as they thought it should be, or can be, or should be. And the Composer's Legion, go back to Beethoven, often his first performance is a travesty. And people making up their minds about what the symphony was. You're desperate really to get the record straightened up.
Absolutely.
So into the studio as soon as you can. And then you know, that classic recording of his is, it tells you what you want to know about the piece.
Well, thank you for your time. Next year when we're here, you and I will go back into some of your CDs, or even maybe a new one, and just have a talk about some of those. And over a period of time, maybe we can have a series of talks about what you've done. But certainly this Britten recording, I think, is an incredible gift to the choral world, and the perspective you bring, and, you know, the knowledge you bring. So thank you. So I hope our listeners enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much, James. It's been delightful, and let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'd like to thank my guest today, Edward Higginbottom, the former conductor of the New College Choir, Oxford, for his interview today and our discussion, and ask you to join me next week where we talk with the new conductor of the New College Choir, Robert Quinney. I'll leave you with one more selection from the Novum 2 CD set, the Britten Hymn to St. Cecilia, conducted by our guest today, Edward Higginbottom. Sounds Choral is produced at the studios of WWFM, the Classical Network, David Osenberg, producer. I'm your host, James Jordan, Westminster Choir College. You can listen to any recent Sounds Choral program by going to our website, wwfm.org, and clicking on Classical and Webcasts. You can also support programming like this with a donation and membership at our website. Thanks so much for listening. Sounds Choral is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and wwfm.org.
Try.